the deepest wrongs. A Course in Miracles asks, do we prefer to be right or to be happy? Clearly, people do terrible things sometimes. But if we focus always on people's guilt, then we will find ourselves living in a dark and vicious universe. Our capacity to shift our focus from guilt to innocence is our capacity to change the world. This does not mean we should look away when bad things happen or cease the struggle for justice. It just means that there is a personal hook we don't have to sling ourselves onto, that we can always believe in the basic goodness of people even when their behavior does not reflect their goodness. Contrary to popular opinion, this is neither a naive nor a weak position. It doesn't mean we have illusions about the nature or the power of evil. Yet the miracle worker has a more, not a less sophisticated view of how to deal with it. Did Gandhi never feel anger toward British imperialists? Did Martin Luther King Jr. never feel anger toward Southern bigots? Of course they did. They were human. Yet with the help of God, they worked through their anger, moving past it to something much more powerful, the love that lay beyond. Their spiritual process informed their political and social process, giving them the ultimate authority to move hearts and thus move mountains. To forgive those who have transgressed against you is not to condone evil, but rather to surrender it to a higher authority for ultimate justice. In the Bible it is said, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." That means it's God's business and not yours. Even while prosecuting the worst crimes, we can remember that guilt in terms of humanly made law is not synonymous with guilt before God. When God parted the Red Sea in order for the Israelites to cross, the Egyptian soldiers then ran after them. At that point, God closed the waters and the Egyptian soldiers drowned. Yet when the Israelites began to rejoice at the destruction of their enemies, God commanded them to stop. They were not to rejoice at the death of another human being, even when God's justice had deemed it necessary. So it is that we should never take pleasure in another's suffering, even if they do deserve it. We are to hold to the light, to divine consciousness, even when we have to deal with the darkness of the world. Only in that way will the two one day be reconciled. The one that's so hard for all of us. It's very difficult to talk or even think about forgiveness when confronted with the reality of September 11th, 2001. Only silence, not words, can express the horror of that day. Yet, at the same time, a deeper conversation is available to us than the one now dominating our popular dialogue. If we just hold to the simplistic line that they're bad, we're good, let's kill them, then we're dangerously off base, both spiritually and politically. When the Twin Towers were first destroyed, the severity of the emotional blow threw America into our hearts, and with our hearts restored, our minds began working better as well. We were one nation, a true community, some of us experiencing that for the first time in our lives. And the very intelligent question on many people's lips was, why do those people hate us so much? Over dinner tables and around office water coolers, we asked questions we'd not been asking often enough over the last few decades. What has America been doing around the world? And how are we perceived by others? Even mainstream American television, not always known for its intellectual depth, hosted brilliant political thinkers and philosophers to educate the American people on issues we now painfully recognized were very relevant to our lives. Yet several days later, it was like someone had pulled the plug. No more interesting thinkers on television, just cheerleaders for revenge. We were to move into war mode, and quickly. That mode could not tolerate the suggestion that America had played even the tiniest part in attracting our misfortune. Anyone who even hinted such a thing was described as blaming America. Clichés were substituted for meaningful conversation. Intellectual excellence, healthy skepticism, and any discussion of spirituality or compassion as they related to the threat of terrorism were deemed the undermining machinations of unpatriotic Americans. Yet I've noticed that it's the people who suffered the most on 9/11 who often displayed the capacity for the highest vision of what occurred that day. from pushing for a 9/11 commission when the president himself was resisting it, to forming groups like September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, which stand for compassion and forgiveness in the midst of this collective darkness. Those who suffered the most have taken the strongest stand for the power of truth. One day I was watching a TV roundtable discussion with three victims of 9/11. One woman had lost her husband at the World Trade Center. One man had lost his young son who was working at the Pentagon when it was bombed. At the end of the discussion, the news anchor asked one last question, "Do you want revenge?" A pained expression crossed the face of every member of the roundtable at that question. I remember the woman saying, "No, because I can't imagine anyone else having to go through the pain we have been through." The man who lost his son said, "No, I think we've got to find a way to make those people over there know who we really are so they won't hate us anymore." The third panelist said something similar. And then the TV journalist, who himself had suffered no personal loss on 9/11, said this, "Well, I want revenge, and I want it to be fierce and swift." It was obvious that those who had suffered the most had been lifted up to a place that he had not. They didn't want to continue the violence. They just wanted the violence to end. There are wars that the vast majority of us would call righteous wars, such as America's involvement in World War II. Now as then, there are people who wish our country harm and would kill us if they could. It is obviously both our right and our responsibility to defend ourselves. But the conversation should not stop there. If our first responsibility as individuals is to accept the atonement for ourselves, then America's first order of business should be getting our own actions right with God. No nation should fear deep reflection and self-examination. What we should fear is our urge to avoid them. America has our own atonement to attend to, a humble heart through which we admit our own errors and seek to live in more righteous relationship with the peoples of the world, is a spiritual approach to our current situation that is a healthy complement to more aggressive problem-solving options. As long as brute force is deemed the greatest power and love is deemed essentially weak, then we are mocking God and dealing dangerously with our future. Not every cancer can be surgically removed, and when it is inoperable, we now know that spiritual practice can be efficacious in helping to heal the body. Terrorism is not an operable tumor, though perhaps we're pretending that it is. It is, in fact, a cancer that has already metastasized throughout the global body, and while some invasive measures might be appropriate, a holistic approach to the problem, in which we employ the powers of the mind and heart to activate our social immune system, is a more mature and effective means of dealing with it than the ego's retribution and revenge. If hate is more powerful than love, then we're on the right track. If love is more powerful than hate, then we're headed in a very, very wrong direction. At the center of the American ideal are eternal values of justice and right relationship. The only way to navigate these somewhat dangerous times is to cleave to our values, not turn away from them in pursuit of short-term advantage. Nations, like individuals, emerge spiritually from the mind of God. We will only find our safety in Him, and He is love. In Him, we are all one. He loves every nation as much as He loves ours, and the blessing of the United States has always been our realization of the equality of all people. In turning away from that realization, in building so many barriers between ourselves and others, we are literally spurning God. According to A Course in Miracles, God does not give us victory in battle. Rather, He lifts us above the battlefield. From there, we will see what we're not seeing now, and the power of that vision will pave the way to true peace.